News, January 18th, 1894. Tonight, clear and cold, a low of 20. The warm-up continues Friday, 39 degrees, Saturday, 40, Sunday, 43, Monday, 46. Right now, the sun is shining, the sky is blue, wind is from the west-southwest at 20 miles per hour. Here are the new numbers just in, 19 degrees in Racine, 18 Kenosha, wind chill to above. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 minutes after 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the morning show also comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Jack and Drea. 2401 60th Street, online at jackandrea.com. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Fabulous song from a fabulous show. The show is Rent. This is Seasons of Love. And on today's morning show, we're going to be talking about this remarkable show because it is about to open at the Rhodey Opera House in downtown Kenosha, presented by the Lakeside Players. We will most likely have four guests all together by the time we're done today. For now, we have two of our guests here, Katie Gray, who is the stage director for this production, and Thomas Minkowski, who portrays the role of Mark, who serves as kind of a narrator throughout the course of this show, which focuses on some young adults in the heart of New York City who are dealing with struggles of one kind or another. And Rent very closely echoes one of the most beloved operas ever composed, Giacomo Puccini's La Bohème. The show is going to be opening, as we said, this weekend and running through the first weekend in February. And so Katie Gray and Tom Minkowski, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you.
And we have one more cast member likely to still come, and the music director as well, Joe Cardamone, we know is on the way. So we look forward to all that, but we can certainly get started right now. Katie Gray, what do you know about the Lakeside Players deciding to undertake Rent? And were you at all involved in that conversation and or decision?
Yes. So we had previously done musicals that were a little bit more adult in nature, like Avenue Q and Hair, and they were received very well. So we thought we would really take a risk on Rent. And I'm on the board, and so we are the ones who ultimately decide who does the shows. And so I knew earlier on in the process that we were going to be doing this. And so I kind of had all of, I was like, oh, I really do want to direct this show. It's my favorite show of all time. So
there you go.
I've been in love with it for years and years. So when we actually had the go ahead, I was kind of already formulating a plan.
Sure. And we should just clarify for anybody who's not, although probably everybody listening knows what Hair is. I'm not sure everybody listening knows what Avenue Q is. But when you say more adult things, you're talking about things that are, let's say, more rated PG than G.
Correct.
And maybe even rated R in some cases.
Correct.
In terms of their content, mm-hmm. and language and so on. And the fact that those went over as well as they did made you and the board feel comfortable about undertaking a show like that.
Yes, yes. Because typically when we've done musicals, when we started doing musicals yearly, they were a little more kid friendly. We still have a family series that is extremely kid friendly, but we did Wizard of Oz 5 years ago,
right?
And that was obviously a big hit. And then we got the go ahead to do Avenue Q the next year, which is probably the complete opposite, most opposite of Wizard of Oz you could get. And that went over extremely well. So it was, it's nice. It's a nice evolution in the musicals that we're able to do.
Absolutely. And it's also probably important for us to say that that just about everybody can appreciate and enjoy the song we were just playing, but that in some respects does not give you the full flavor of what this score is like. This is a show that packs quite a punch in more ways than one.
Yes, it's a rock opera. It's music pretty much from start to finish. It's very, very little spoken word. It's almost all music. I think it's 46 total songs, so over 2.5 hours. So it's a lot of music.
So I suspect, as someone who has loved Rent all their life, that you are able to give us at least a little bit of the history of when this show first took shape and how it took the world by storm in the early 1990s.
Yes, yeah, so I believe it premiered on Broadway in 1995. It was actually a part of the Tony Awards in 1996. They won a Tony for Best Book and I believe a couple others, and I can't think of them at the moment, but it sort of changed, I think, the musical game, because it's not the musical you're used to hearing. It's a rock opera. And I saw it for the first time in 2001, and I knew some of the content. I didn't know all of the music. And I remember being in the theater, and when the song Rent happened, I think my jaw dropped, because I was like, this is unlike anything I've ever heard. And it was an amazing experience. And it's an emotional show, and it's a funny show, and it's kind of got the whole gamut. And so it's a beautiful show.
Where was this that you saw Rent?
I saw it in New York.
Oh,
for the first time in 2001. I was lucky enough to go on a school trip. My orchestra is actually invited to Carnegie Hall, and we all got to pick a Broadway show. So I picked Rent.
And did you pick it knowing very much about it, or were you going in a sense sort of blind?
I sort of picked it blind. I knew that everyone had been talking about it, and I didn't know if I was ever going to be able to see it outside of New York at that time. And so I decided that's the one I wanted to see. So it was me and a few of my good friends in high school, and we all sort of had the same kind of emotional reaction.
Right.
But I don't think any of us were prepared for the show.
Yeah. So you've loved it ever since. Is this the first time, at least in kind of a hands-on way, that you've ever been able to do Rent yourself?
Yes. So that was really exciting, because I've seen it a number of times. I've seen it in different areas. I've seen it in Chicago, and when I lived in Texas, I saw it in Texas. I've seen it in New York twice. So, yeah, this is the first time I was able to kind of craft what I thought it, you know, should look like.
Wow, 15 years. I'm curious, Thomas Minkowski,
yes.
Did you know Rent? Pull that a little closer to you. going into this process, what was your own acquaintance with the show Rent?
Yeah, I've known Rent for a really long time. I've been doing theater around the Kenosha area since I was 4 years old. So it's been a while. And when I was younger, I remember I did a summer show. I think it was KIPAC, Kenosha Youth Performing Arts. And during that show, I was young, probably too young to be listening to Rent, but all the people that I was surrounded by, we just kept talking about this one show, Rent, and how the music was amazing, and it got me curious and interested, and it was around the time that the movie came out, I think, and I got the soundtrack, started listening to it, and instantly fell in love with it because it was nothing I've ever heard in terms of musical theater, and that's really what struck a chord with me for Rent, is that it really was a turning point in just musical theater as a genre, in general. It completely shaped the way that we view musical theater from that point on. It resonated with me back then.
Very good. As you said, at a tender young age, younger than probably Rent is intended, but that's fine. That's fine. Joe Cardamone has joined us. He's the musical director for Rent. And ahead of your involvement with this production, what was your own experience with and or knowledge of Rent?
Yeah, my recollection, because I've been thinking about this a lot in preparation for the show, I think I was in my first year of law school in Madison, and I think it was actually a story about the Democratic National Convention in 1996, and I think they may have played Seasons of Love either as part of it or during it, or they were somehow on public radio. They had this snippet of a piece of music, and I thought, this is really an incredible piece. You know, I heard you playing it as I was driving in looking for a parking spot. and as is often my way with musicals, it is not uncommon for me to hear a song from a musical and then go and seek out the rest of it to see what the rest of it is about. And so I remember buying the cast album, and I think like everyone else, just sort of loving it. I mean, I think Thomas puts it very well. I was telling somebody yesterday, there are just certain works in the musical theater canon that, I think are extremely important, whether you like them or not. You know, they do represent a point of opening up a new field of what musical theater can be. And I think of West Side Story as being one of those moments, this one being another one, Hamilton, obviously, a couple of years ago. I mean, I think there's certain shows that sort of blow the doors off of expectations and say, you think you know what musical theater is all about, let me show you this. So I also have seen it multiple times, and one of the things that I'm struck by is perhaps because it is a rock opera, it is almost entirely sung through. We've joked there's probably a dozen, maybe two dozen lines of dialogue in 2.5 hours, and the rest of it is essentially sung through. I've seen productions that, for lack of a better term, are very good concerts, but not necessarily great theater. And I think that one of the aspects of this one is I think Katie has really crafted a good piece of theater as well. It's not just music. I mean, it's engaging as a piece of theater along with the music. I think we are the certainly the first theater in Kenosha area, Kenosha, Racine, et cetera, other than Unified did the student version several years ago. It's very exciting to be bringing this piece of theater to the community, and and in much the same way that I think the show opened up different avenues. And again, I heard Katie commenting as we were walking in, or as I was walking in. There's a I think it's also demonstrated that the Kenosha community and the area community is open to shows that at one point conventional wisdom would have said won't play here. I've been involved with Lakeside Players long enough, and Katie's been involved longer than I have, to know there was a time where you know, I think the thought of us doing this would have been inconceivable. A, because the thought would have been we can't. I mean, we would physically not be able to get the people to do it, and no one would come see it. It would be so far out of our wheelhouse that we, you know. And it's I don't think it's been intentional exactly, but we really have sort of settled into this pattern in the last several years of doing our musicals of going very family friendly and incredibly not, you know, and sort of alternating years.
Yeah, I don't think it's a pattern, but yes, that's absolutely what's happened.
You know, and I joke, you know, starting with Wizard of Oz, which was followed by Avenue Q, followed by Into the Woods, Hair, Secret Garden, and now this, you know, and like you said, I mean, they've been very well received, and I think it's stated that there is the old conventional wisdom of you can't risk offending anybody. I don't know that it holds as true, or maybe a better way of putting it is I think our audiences are more sophisticated than we give them credit for.
Fair enough, and yeah, the fact that the Lakeside Players have scored significant successes with all of the shows that you just listed that really says something about the Lakeside Players and about your audience. For those of you just joining us, we are talking today on The Morning Show about Jonathan Larson's Rent, which opens tomorrow night at the Rhodey Opera House in downtown Kenosha, the home of the Lakeside Players, and it will be performed through the 3rd of February. We have with us in our studios Joe Cardamone, who's the music director, Katie Gray, who is the stage director, and Thomas Minkowski, who is portraying the role of Mark, who is also, in a sense, kind of the narrator of the show, and a very important presence in this. So who would like to tackle the whole matter of Rent versus La Boheme and the connection between these two works?
I'll try. It's, you know, it follows fairly closely. It's about... you know, two best friends essentially living in, you know, pre-gentrification New York. Obviously, Rent is, you know, they're poor, they're starving. You know, it's they're kind of the lowest of the low, and they meet, they have this family of sort of misfits that that really becomes, you know, their closest friends, and that we follow them throughout the year. And, you know, it follows a lot of the same patterns. And I don't want to give anything away for anyone who hasn't seen Rent but has seen La Boheme. But the ending is different. So, but it's very similar. And I think, you know, he kind of, in the same way where now it's a rock opera, I imagine Jonathan Larson wanted to bring this sort of really classic story into the modern world. And, you know, they tackle a lot of issues. They tackle the beginning of the AIDS epidemic. And I know that from reading things, you know, he had a lot of friends who were affected by this. And I think that also struck a chord for me because I've had a couple friends. I've been in the theater for many, many years and have had friends who were affected by it. And so when I saw it, it had just actually come on the heels of I've lost a friend to it. So I think that was also really poignant for me. So, yeah, in La Boheme, it's cholera, or it's consumption. I believe it's tuberculosis, so obviously it's a little different. But I think that the parallels are really, really nice, but he also makes it so it's definitely its own show. So you're definitely not going to be like, oh, no, I know, they did this in La Boheme.
Right.
So I think it helps.
Yeah, there's enough differences and certainly a complete difference in style, yes, and approach that and yet it is so intriguing that someone would even think to take this beloved opera from 100 years earlier
and modernize it.
And, right. And what's amazing is, I mean, my wife is a very big fan of La Boheme and has done the part of Mimi a couple of times. And when you sit down and you actually do put them side to side, it is remarkable how closely he does hew to the storyline for the most part and is able to bring it into a modern era, you know, the poet and the painter become the songwriter and the videographer or the filmmaker, you know,
well, and Rodolfo becomes Roger and Marcello,
yeah, exactly,
becomes,
yeah,
Mark,
you know,
yeah.
So intriguing.
You know, she, you know, there's a whole aria in, as you know, infinitely better than I do, in La Boheme about the, you know, I'm Mimi, or they call me Mimi, which is one line in our song, but I mean, or in the show. But it is, like I said, it really does hue very closely.
Right. Clearly, Jonathan Larson knew La Boheme really well,
yes,
and had great affection for it. And on the other hand, he also knew enough to know that it didn't make sense to retell La Boheme with rock music. I mean, he also is not afraid to vary the story, to step away from that original storyline, doing whatever it takes to make this story make sense. And
yes,
it's incredible what he achieves. Thomas, let's have you talk for a moment about the character of Mark, who,
okay,
as we've already mentioned, is something of a narrator through the course of the show, and really important. Tell us more about him, who he is, and the function that he serves in this show.
Yeah, so Mark Cohen, he does act as a narrator throughout the entire show, and he's a filmmaker, as we said. He rooms with Roger, who is a struggling musician. His roommate has AIDS. They've been living together for a long time. So Mark kind of, he's a bystander for a lot of the show, and throughout the show, as the show gets deeper into it, he starts to become more and more a part of the story, I would say. You start to see the struggles that he's dealing with rather than just seeing him as the narrator, which is really interesting because you just kind of see him as, oh, he's a filmmaker. These are all his friends. He's, like, documenting life. But no, he's, even though he doesn't have AIDS and he doesn't, like he's not dealing with a lot of the things that his friends are, he's a part of it still. He's losing people. He's scared that his roommate, his best friend, like, he could lose him in any day. There's a part in it where, you learn that Roger's ex-girlfriend, like, had AIDS, and she ended up dying, and, like, Mark was around for that. Like, there's stuff that he has to go through as well. And it's interesting because I was reading something about the show and Jonathan Larson and what he was, like, when he was writing it, what he was thinking and stuff, and all of his, like, close friends essentially said that it's really interesting to them, the show, because they can see Jonathan Larson in every single character. Like, like, there's not one character in the, like, you, I feel like you'd think that, like, he'd put himself as Mark, like, or at least I would, just because, like being a narrator, watching the show, but no, he pretty much evenly divides himself in every character. It's Jonathan Larson didn't have AIDS, but he was around witnessing this epidemic and his friends dying, which is Mark. He was a struggling writer, songwriter, like Roger. Like, he, Rent was the first and only, well, I mean, his other works have kind of become more popular since Rent, but that was his break. Like, that,
yeah, this
was
what put him on the map.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, like, but before that, he wrote this story about a struggling songwriter, which was also him. And, like, it's really interesting, like, knowing about his life and then looking at the show and seeing all these parallels between the different characters and, like, playing Mark especially. It's been really interesting because I do get to kind of be a bystander and watch a lot of the people and see what they're dealing with, but try and portray how it affects the people that aren't directly part of this epidemic or this issue.
Yeah.
Remind
me the means by which you narrate.
Yes.
I mean, are you standing on the stage and directing your comments to the audience, or
there are very few lines that I direct to the audience. As we've said before, it's a rock opera, so there are very little lines. And I have probably the majority of those lines because I'm the narrator, and some of those, I do direct them out towards the audience. But the majority of it is I'm narrating it through being a struggling a struggling artist wanting to be a filmmaker, and I'm recording. Like, the show starts off with me doing a slate to, like, my camera, saying, like, December 24th, 9 p.m., and saying that I'm going to just try recording my life every day because all my other stuff that I've tried to do has been horrible. So that's how you learn that I'm the narrator. And essentially, Mark documenting the life of him and his friends for a year, and then trying to make something out of that, trying to kind of just because he knows he has something special, and that there's an important story that needs to be told that's happening in his life, and he tries his best to kind of let the audience and the people in the show like see what we're actually dealing with. Yeah.
So you're narrating this film that you're making, which is kind of cinema verite, just capturing the lives of your friends.
Absolutely.
And then we get to eavesdrop.
Yes, yes. And as I said, it's very cool because consistently throughout the show, he is narrating. But as the show progresses, as I said, he does become part of it more. Like at the beginning, I would say you see him more as a narrator than anything else. And then later on, he becomes part of the family, I guess. It's a really interesting transition for a character. I love that part. I love Mark. I love what he has to offer. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Jonathan Larson's Rent, which opens tomorrow night, performed by the Lakeside Players of Kenosha. Tom Minkowski will be the role of Mark. Katie Gray is the stage director. Joe Cardamone is the music director. So I suspect that because this is one of those groundbreaking works, I suspect you had a torrent of talent come in the door for your auditions. I mean, this just it seems like a show like Hamilton or like Les Mis or like any number of other shows where there are just a whole lot of people who would just give anything to be in Rent.
Yeah. I mean, I think at our height, we had over 100 people who signed up to audition. I don't think we got quite that many that actually followed through and made it, but it was close. I mean,
yeah. Wow. And it's a relatively small show.
Yes, it's 20 people, so 8 leads and the rest ensemble. And I think for a lot of people, myself included, this is their bucket list show. This is the show that they always wanted to do. And unfortunately, because it is comprised of mostly younger people in their 20s, there's pretty much an age limit of how long they can actually do this show. So,
where it makes sense. Or
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, I think we had a lot of people, and it was really fascinating because it was a lot of people that I didn't know and Joe didn't know. So it was a lot of new people, I think, not only to the theater, but maybe to the Kenosha theater scene, and that had not worked in a musical with us in the past. So we had quite a few people who did audition who had, but most of the show are people that I've not worked with, and I don't think Joe has worked with either.
Yeah, I think there's only 2 people in the cast that I've worked with before.
Wow. Yeah, there's 3 for me.
Three, I guess.
Yeah, so it's, you know, out of 20. That's pretty good.
Wow, yeah, so that's a lot of new blood that is infused into the Lakeside Players in a sense.
Yeah, including, I mean, and a significant, maybe it's 4 people, significant geographical draw as well. I mean, we've got people coming from Milwaukee environs. We were both kind of blown away. I mean, it shouldn't be that big a deal, but we've got somebody who is a fairly regular performer up at the Skylight in Milwaukee, who's coming down to do the show and rehearsing with us. People who have been involved with the Racine Theater Guild, folks coming from down in Illinois. I kind of get kidded because I say this every year, but I think it is one of the strongest groups we've worked with, and it just does get better every year when we do these shows.
Yeah, I agree.
Katie, one of the interesting challenges, it seems to me, for you as the stage director is that you probably, I don't know, this. I don't think this is entirely true, but it's sort of true that when you do a show like, I don't know, Oklahoma or something, I mean, that a stage director typically is doing a whole lot with, you know, when Curly is talking to Aunt Eller and, you know, trying to make that very authentic and very fresh and very funny or whatever that moment needs to be. But then when it comes time to sing, you sort of just let the person sing their song. And of course, you still want it to be authentic and so on, but it's like something else is happening at that point, and it's a little less about what are you thinking here and what are you thinking here. It just, you let the song sort of carry the moment to some extent. But here we are with Rent, where nearly everything is sung. And so I should think for you as a stage director, this has to feel a little bit different.
Yeah, it was. And it was difficult to to block, and because you want them to feel natural. I don't want to dictate every movement because it just doesn't look right on stage. But then you also want them to do certain things that their character would do, and while they're still remembering to sing their song. So I think that's probably one of the harder parts. Thankfully, there's not a lot of dancing in the show. I think otherwise that would be really complicated. I think that, I mean, luckily Joe and I have worked together many times, so we had a good dynamic of, okay, you tell them how to do this, and I will get them to do this somehow. And, you know, we had complications. Our stage is a little smaller than most, so we, you know, also had to cram 20 people onto that stage, which is not super easy to do, but, you know, we're able to do it.
Right. Well, and the fact that the music, in a sense, dictates the pace of things. I mean, you can't just rush ahead or take certain pauses you might if we're just talking about spoken dialogue. The score, in a sense, is king here, right?
And in fact, on top of that, you know, we've talked about this too, there's very little of what you would consider to be sort of traditional underscoring. There's some, but not a lot. There's almost no transition music. I mean, things, recognizing that there will, God willing, be applause, there's not a lot of break between numbers. It's one of those things where you don't even, I don't think it really hit me until maybe a week ago, you know, when we started really getting down and doing full runs and I was telling someone, I said, you know, it's, you know, almost 2.5 hours of almost completely, you know, sung through, played through. We took a break at intermission. I went and got a bottle of water from the concession stand. I came back, and as I'm walking back in the theater, I'm like, I will have no chance to drink this. I mean, you know, because there's almost, last night, the back of my head, I'm like, oh, my favorite numbers are becoming the ones where I don't have to play because I get a little break for 2 minutes. It's a workout, but I mean, it's also a lot of fun. I mean, it's a fun show to play. But you're right. I mean, that certainly has been a challenge in that, the pacing drives the music drives the pacing. And that's one of the things we've worked on a lot, is trying to make sure that we're getting things at the right tempo so that it feels good to the actors, so that it seems good to an audience watching, that it's not dragging, so that I'm not killing the people in the pit.
That's frowned upon, yes. let's take a moment to listen to something else from Rent. This is a song called I'll Cover You. Somebody tell me a little bit about this song, and then we'll play it.
So I'll Cover You is sung by the characters of Collins and Angel, and they have met on Christmas Eve. This is still over Christmas Eve. The whole first act is just over one day, and they're kind of love at first sight, so they're kind of falling in love. So this is their sort of ballad to each other.
All right. So here's I'll Cover You from Jonathan Larson's Rent.
Much baggage to lay at your feet, but sweet kisses I've got to spare. I'll be there and I'll cover you. I think they meant it when they said you can't buy love. Now I know you can rent it, and at least you are my love. One love. When they said you can't buy love, now I know you can rent it, and at least you are my love. On life, oh my. kisses.
You've got one nickel only you. With a thousand sweet kisses.
When you're worn out
I'll
and
cover
tired.
You with a thousand sweet kisses.
When your heart
I'll cover you.
I'll cover you from Act One of Jonathan Larson's Rent. Joe Cardamone, it occurs to me that one of the intriguing things about Rent is that he's sort of like Wagner in that he's responsible for all of the words and all of the music. I mean, the whole score, top to bottom. Mm-hmm. And that almost never is the case in almost every case, operatically and in Broadway shows. It's at least a team of two, and sometimes a team of even more than that, yeah. that have actually created that. And it seems to me that in terms of the quality of the score, that's part of what makes it really special.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And you're right. I mean, there are people it's not unique, but it is certainly, I think, the minority where it's the one person who does it. And you're right. And the other thing that's nice is I don't think it's a, in my opinion, I don't think it's a score that sounds uniform. You know, I mean, there are pieces that are sort of more traditional music theater influenced pieces, and there are pieces that just, rock like nobody's business. That's part of what's making it fun is. Personally, you kind of get to live out your fantasy of being in a rock band. You know that
if that's your fantasy,
yeah. if it's your fantasy, maybe that's too strong a way of putting it. But I mean, there's something about it. I mean, you get to do this kind of stuff all the time. But I told someone. I mean, when we were doing Into the Woods a couple years ago, I told people it's still. I had to sort of pinch myself occasionally to realize that, I was getting up there and waving my hands and Sondheim was happening in front of me.
Right.
It's kind of the way I feel here too. I mean,
sure.
there's that moment where as we're about to transition into the sort of big opening number, it's like 1, 2, 3, and the drums come in and then these rocking guitar and it is unlike any other theatrical or musical experience I've had in years of yeah. doing theater.
Yeah, you get to do this, and it's this towering work, and Katie, I'm sure it has to be incredibly thrilling for you, having that you have loved this work for so long, and here you are actually directing it.
Yeah, I think it's surreal. I think actually yesterday, I think it felt the most surreal because
I agree.
Yeah, because
as an actor as well. Yeah,
because I think that yesterday is really where we kind of hit on all cylinders. Which, you don't want to peek too soon, so that's good. And I just sat there, and I was just like, I can't wait for people to see this, because I watch it, and I laugh at things, and, I get teary
cried.
At things, and, yeah, I've cried every night we've been doing the show since October, so it's that's good. If I stop crying, I think I'd be concerned. And so I can't wait till people actually get there and see it, and I'm really excited for people who've never seen it, because I think obviously we're going to get a lot of people who have seen it, but I know that most of my family hasn't seen it, and they all have to come, so
right.
So they haven't seen it, and so I'm really excited for them to actually yeah. kind of understand why I love the show so much.
Yeah, that's a great feeling when you are putting on a show and you get to that point where, oh, I want people to come and
mm-hmm.
see this.
Yes.
And until you get to that point, you don't feel like that.
Yes.
You feel
yeah.
like, thank God nobody out from the outside is watching this. But
Katie's heard me say this before, because, like you said, we've worked together many times over the last 5, 6 years, that it's that moment, and again, you don't want it to come too soon, but it's that moment where you go, okay, there's the show.
Yeah.
it's like all the pieces coming, okay, now.
Yeah.
I think everybody, it's as an actor who's behind the stage, like talking to other actors as well, I think that was a pretty communal feeling last night. Like, it wasn't just like you got, like, we kind of... I don't know what happened. Like, Joe put it best earlier, said, like, there's just something about it, and it's, like, it was, like, kind of one of those moments. Just, like, wow, there's something there's just something special happening right now. Like, can't really like articulate it. I can't tell you what it is, but something feels good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And you're glad it's happening.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
And it's impressive because we've been, you know, rehearsing it. It's a long show. So, I mean, we're there till really late. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, there's the sickness going around that I think everyone's probably gotten at this point. I haven't, knock on wood, but, and so, you know, there's people who are sick and we're all exhausted. And yet yesterday I was like, oh, this is the show right here. Like, this is great. Okay.
That's cool. I want to play a short little moment from Rent. And this is something that occurs again and again and again and again through the course of the show. And that's all I'm going to say. I'm just going to play it right now.
Speak.
That was a very loud beep. I don't even know if this is working. Mark, are you there? Are you screening your calls? It's Mom. We wanted to call and say we love you and we'll miss you tomorrow. Cindy and the kids are here. Send their love. Oh, I hope you like the hot plate. Just don't leave it on, dear, when you leave the house. Oh, and Mark, we're sorry to hear that Maureen dumped you. I say la vie. So let her be a lesbian. There are other fishies in the sea. Love, Mom.
So this is kind of a recurrent motif of sorts in the show where we hear these messages from Mark's mother. So I'm curious, especially from you, Tom, but from anybody, what is the point of those phone messages? What is their function in the show?
Yeah, I can tackle that. So there are a lot of reasons that they exist, I think. One of them is kind of show the people that are in the characters' lives that aren't part of the main story, that he's not documenting technically, but also it's just a really interesting device to kind of give certain plot points, like because that's one of the first things in the show, that is the first voicemail in the show, and it's interesting because right before that my character says, oh, the phone's ringing, we're screening this call, like we're gonna keep screening the calls, we're not gonna answer. We never answer unless it's like a friend, and then because of that, like, you get to hear these voicemails where it's like, oh, that was my mom that was just doing that one. She's telling she's saying all these like nonsensical stuff, saying, oh, sorry to hear that. Like, or like, I hope you like the hot plate. It's like, yeah, Mom, like, I'm living in a place with no power, no anything. Like, thank you. I appreciate the thought, you know? But then she says, like, sorry to hear Maureen dumped you. Like, let her be a lesbian. Like, there are other people out there for you. And it's like, that's all that needs to be, that's an important part of the show, but that's all that needs to be said. Because it's such an interesting device that I think it just draws people's, it makes people focus on it. It draws people's attention, like just to the voicemail and to what's being said, because it is so interesting, and it, because of that, it effectively communicates what these certain plot points without really having to like stay on them and really like beat them
right.
Red, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you avoids being laborious.
Exactly.
I think that's how he gets around using just, you know, a monologue. He just is like, I'll just have someone else tell, you know, the quickest part of that plot point, and then we don't have to say more words. We can sing again. So I think that's how he uses it. It's sort of like a narration tool.
Yeah. It is, yeah.
Another thing that I like about that is that it also kind of reminds us that there's this whole other world, and this whole other way that people live, that's a little more, or at least the way it's conveyed in these phones, it feels a little more like just Leave It to Beaver America.
Yeah. Yes.
With,
yes,
you know, Mom and Dad and normal things. And then it sets in such sort of stark relief then the life that these young people are living, some of them very much by choice and some of them not so much by choice. But I love that. That gives it the show a whole different kind of texture or something. So,
yes.
Katie, say a word about your cast overall.
I think Joe actually probably hit the nail on the head. It is probably the most talented cast I've worked with, and they've all been very fun to work with. So I will, you know, I'm already like kind of in the mourning phase of missing the show, because essentially, I mean, my part is done. We have rehearsal tonight, and then they open, and it's my father, who is a big into theater. He said, you know, opening night is when the cast, it's their show. It's no longer your show. And so, yeah, so I'm going to be really sad. I've spent a lot of time and hours on this show. So I've been actively involved in this show since August is when I put in, I think, the bid to actually direct.
Wow.
And then got Joe on board and got other people on board. And we've been in rehearsal since mid-October. So it's been over half a year. Mm. So, yeah, it's been a long part of a life.
Briefly, Joe, anything you want to say about the cast and or band?
The cast is phenomenal. I will sort of echo Katie's point, which is I think why I've never just outright directed. I'm frequently people think I'm nuts, but I think one of the reasons that every time I've worked there, I've staged and music directed, if I've been stage directing, is that I get to continue to be a part of the show until it closes. You know, a couple years ago, someone said, oh, well, the show's opening, you know, so you get to relax. I said, well, that would be true in a normal show, but because I'm a nut, you know, I'm conducting, or in this case, playing. The band is phenomenal. I mean, I could not be happier with what they've done with really a very minimum amount of rehearsals. And it's three students. It's two Carthage students who you may or may not know, Aaron Motley and Nathaniel, and I hope it's Itter and not Eiter. And then a Parkside student, Eliana. I'm gonna blank on her last name, who's just phenomenal on the drums. And then your colleague Dmitry Shapolov is our other keyboardist. Mm. I'm just floored every night with what these four other people do to make me and sound good and support the rest of the show. And it's just it is a blast.
Fantastic. Well, it's certainly exciting to think of Rent exploding on the scene here in Kenosha. I know a lot of people are absolutely thrilled at the opportunity to see it, as all of your cast and crew and band have been thrilled to also be part of such an important work, one of the towering, groundbreaking masterworks in the history of musical theater. So Rent opens tomorrow night, and it runs through the 3rd of February at the Rhodey Opera House in downtown Kenosha. And you can go to their website, which is rhodeycenter.org, or call them at 657-7529. Is there another website I should tell them?
Nope, Rhodey Center is probably the easiest way to get the tickets.
And otherwise, 657-7529. To get your tickets for Rent. I want to thank Katie Gray, stage director, Joe Cardamone, music director, and Tom Minkowski, who portrays the role of Mark in Rent. Best wishes to you and the whole cast and crew of Rent. Best wishes and thanks for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you.
In truth, the she learned, or in times that he cried, the way that she died.
It's time now to sing out, though the story never ends. Let's celebrate, remember, a year in the life of friends. But
you got to remember the love.
Love.
You know love is a gift from up above.
Love.
It's a minute before 9 o'clock here on WGTD. Tomorrow on the morning show, Associate Professor of Political Science Gerald Mass joins me on the morning show to look back on this first year of the presidency of Donald Trump. And on Monday, I look forward to the visit of another Carthage faculty colleague, Dr. Art Sear, who will pay his monthly visit to the program. And look forward to talking with Professor Sear about a variety of different topics and issues. Tuesday, the morning show will feature Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, and a conversation about the